It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It has been a sunny and dry start to the summer season in Wisconsin. So when you reach for that sunscreen, do you know what the active ingredients do and how to get the most protection from UV rays? Join in the conversation about sunscreen. Call in with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kelly Dobos is a cosmetic chemist and adjunct professor of cosmetic science at the University of Cincinnati. Kelly, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. It's great to be here and talk about this important topic of sunscreens.
Yes, so the American Academy of Dermatology says some phrases that we see on sunscreen packaging can be misleading. Words like reef safe and chemical free, non-toxic. What do you think of these terms on labels?
Sure. I'll start with, as a chemist, one of my favorite topics is the chemical-free claim. And, all of the ingredients in sunscreens are chemicals. Basically, a chemical is any compound that's made up of atoms. So it's a little misleading to refer to them as chemical-free because they're all chemicals. And that kind of gets further complicated when we try to describe them as mineral or physical blockers compared to chemical blockers as well, because the term mineral implies something is natural, and zinc oxide and titanium dioxide are certainly not natural in the form they're used in cosmetics. They have to be either synthesized or processed very heavily to make them safe for use in these products. And they're not exactly 100% physical blockers of sun either. There is some absorption happening. So it gets complicated when we try to simplify the classification of these materials.
I think that's a really important distinction when we see the word sun block. When I think of a block, nothing's getting through it, Kelly. And so when you mineral sunblock made with titanium dioxide or zinc oxide, can you explain the difference between the word sunscreen and sunblock?
According to the United States FDA, which regulates sunscreens as an OTC drug, you can't actually use the word sunblock anymore because, as you stated, there's no 100% protection from the sun. So sunblock is actually a term that you can't use on labeling anymore for sunscreen products. Sunscreen products have to be labeled with an SPF, and that tells us the amount of protection you're getting from UVB rays. And now they have to also be labeled in terms of how much UVA protection they're providing. And that comes in with the broad spectrum claim. So we have to have some comparable level of UVA protection to our SPF in order to make that broad spectrum claim as well.
How much latitude do manufacturers have on their terminology? I mean, we're talking about broad spectrum and these other terms, SPF, that you see on labels and you're trying to use as a playing field leveler, if you will. How much latitude do the makers have with what is regulated by the Food and Drug Administration in terms of the terminology?
Sunscreens are regulated as an OTC drug, and that means that they have to follow the labeling guidelines from the FDA with regards to things like SPF and the types of claims they can make and how they lay out the ingredients. The active ingredients have to be at the top of the list in a section that identifies them as active ingredients. And the SPF number and the UVA claim, those are taken from results of testing. So there are specific procedures and that have to be followed to test the product in order to make those claims. So it's very strict in terms of passing that test before you can make the claim. And that SPF number is calculated from the SPF test as well. So there's not a lot of latitude in what they can claim with regards to SPF and UVA protection. And the other claims that you can make with a sunscreen in fact, you know, protection from skin cancer. That claim is also tied to the type of testing and results you get as well. So those are very tightly controlled by the U.S. FDA.
Tightly controlled by the FDA. Talking about sunscreen ingredients, the packaging, the marketing, Kelly Dobos here, cosmetic chemist. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. So, Kelly, what does organic mean on sunscreen packaging?
This is an interesting one from a chemist perspective. When we talk about organic chemistry, we're talking about the chemistry of molecules that contain carbon-carbon or carbon-hydrogen bonds.
Oh, you mean the class I couldn't pass, right?
It's also known as, right? And I still remember that my organic class and how tough it was. So that's what we chemists define as organic. But in the consumer mindset, it's come to mean you know, materials that are grown without the use of pesticides. So there's a different definition to organic in the consumer mindset. So we chemists define organic sunscreen actives as those that contain those carbon-carbon, carbon-hydrogen bonds as compared to the inorganic, which means these chemicals don't have any carbon bonds, and those are the titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. And those are the clearest definitions for us to describe these sunscreen active ingredients when it comes to the chemistry of them. But it gets a little confusing for the consumer when they are familiar with the term organic as it relates to things they buy at the grocery store.
Indeed, yes. So let's enter the Environmental Working Group here, releasing their first ever list of verified sunscreens. The group is the nonprofit of scientists, advocates researching healthcare products and legislation. Do you think our third-party verification seals valuable?
When it comes to groups like the Environmental Working Group, they obviously have good intentions with what they're trying to do, but we often, as scientists, find some of the ways they're making these determinations to be a little bit questionable. And some of the studies that they rely on for safety may not really apply to the particular actual route of exposure of the material or how it's actually formulated into a product. Because some of these studies, these toxicology studies they look at, might focus on a single ingredient used at a very high level that isn't really representative of how a chemical is going to be used in a cosmetic or OTC drug type product.
But then are there other groups or other organizations in the consumer's camp that are watching out for consumers beyond regulators?
What I would look to are groups like the Skin Cancer Foundation, and they have a lot of great information on sun protection, sun SPF products, and all of that information is readily available online. And another great resource for sunscreen information is the American Academy of Dermatology. So I would look to these groups for information as well.
Okay, so some cosmetic products are really multitasking. They include sunscreens like face moisturizers and bug sprays. Are these types of products, these 3-in-1, 4-in-1s, an effective way to protect skin from the sun?
Any product that makes a SPF claim has to pass the same testing as a beach product would. So they are held to the same standard, and they should, by meeting the requirements of the test, they should be equivalent to a beach-type product. They often may be lower SPF if it's a multitasking product, because when we're trying to combine all of these different ingredients and chemistries, it might be harder to achieve that a high level of SPF, something like a 50 or a 60 in a like a makeup-type product.
My concern is if you apply the sunscreen a lot, like you should, and you apply insect repellent sparingly and less often, is that a good combination?
One of the examples I'll think about it is a makeup product, right, with a sunscreen. You're not going to be applying that every 2 hours as you should with a sunscreen product. Right. So you shouldn't be relying on that product for your primary source of sun protection. So these are good maybe adjuncts to your your typical sunscreen, but they shouldn't be relied on as your primary, because like I said, nobody's going to be reapplying their foundation every 2 hours, and that is the recommendation for sunscreens, is to ensure that you reapply every 2 hours, because we sweat, we're moving, we might be rubbing some of the sunscreen off. So you want to be sure you're reapplying every 2 hours when you're exposing yourself to the sun.
Cosmetic chemist Kelly Dobos, our guide to the ingredients in sunscreen, the chemistry, how to read these labels. You can be part of this discussion and share how you protect yourself from harmful rays. Call in with a question, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn how to discern the ingredients in sunscreen, chemicals of concern on sunscreen labels, and the terminology used for effectiveness. Waterproof, sweatproof, sweat-resistant, non-toxic. Join in at any point about these products. Call in with a question about sunscreen you use or wonder about, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have cosmetic chemist Kelly Dobos with us. So, Kelly, the known carcinogen called benzene is found in some sunscreens, and benzene never intentionally added as an ingredient, according to the Cleveland Clinic. How does benzene find its way into sunscreen?
The benzene that we've seen stories about in the news was really linked to the propellants used in some of the aerosol-type sunscreen. So it was a trace contaminant in that particular part of the product. So, you know, if you're really looking to ensure you're avoiding potential benzene, you can look to use the cream or lotion type format products instead of the aerosols. And the benzene that the levels of benzene are very low trace levels. And what I would say is that we're continuously exposed to benzene in our environment from other sources, from, you know, when you're pumping gasoline. If you smoke, that is a really high concentration of benzene. So even though it is concerning that this benzene has been found in the propellant, I'd caution people not to get too concerned over the benzene, and know that the companies who discovered benzene in their products have worked very diligently to identify the source of the contamination and help remove it from their product. So that's work that is continuing to be done. So
a little bit more of the chemical discerning here. There's also oxybenzone and avobenzone, and then PABA, the para-aminobenzoic acid. What can you tell us about those chemicals?
So these different sunscreen active ingredients are often used in combination in a product to give you that broad spectrum coverage, because each of the ingredients has a little bit different area of the spectrum that they might cover. And so that's why we tend to use a combination of these materials. PABA has become known as an allergen to the skin, and it's actually not used anymore in any sunscreen formulation. So when it became known that there's the potential for allergenicity with this material, it started to be removed from products, and that I'd say be hard-pressed to find any sunscreen using that material today.
What is the difference between an allergen and an irritant in products?
This is a very interesting question. And when something is an allergen, it's an immune response in your skin, compared to an irritant, which is a more, what I would say is that if something is an irritant, everyone will be irritated by the material. And if something's an allergen, it's going to be an individual specific response. So they're different in their mechanisms of how these reactions happen in the skin. And so an allergen, because it's in more individual specific, I might be allergic to a particular fragrance and you might not. So it can be very hard for a company to make a product that is completely non-allergenic to everyone. So that's why they use the term hypoallergenic on products. Hypoallergenic means that a product has been tested with a large number of subjects to ensure that it's less allergenic than normal. So they're able to make that claim by doing that testing. And, you know, it's important to remember that hypoallergenic doesn't mean non-allergenic. It just means less than.
Talking about sunscreen ingredients with Kelly Dobos, cosmetic chemist, you can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Rory is here from Chippewa Falls. Rory, hi.
Hi. I'm 73 years old, and I've had melanomas and basal cells, and a lot of precancerous basal cells. And a lot of that's because I've got red hair and blue eyes. So I've got really white skin. But I think people have to be aware that the sunblock or sunscreen doesn't cover everything. And they're probably better off if they can to wear long clothing, especially if they're going to be out for a long time, because the sun gets blocked out a lot better that way.
Rory, thank you so much for that. And Kelly, such an important point there that sunscreens and sunblock aren't perfect. They don't do it all.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the complications with sunscreen is that sometimes they don't feel so great or they don't look so great on the skin. And that can be a barrier to people using it as often as they should or reapplying as often as they should. So sun avoidance is a great way to protect yourself as well. You know, one thing I always caution people against is tanning is, you know, purposefully tanning, whether it's in a sun or in a tanning bed, is really dangerous. And that is something that, you know, we shouldn't be doing, because we should be, the tanning response is actually, you know, a sign of damage to our skin. So
we heard from Beth in Milton, has a question about oxybenzone. Beth says, we have well water and products will make your clothes turn orange. And Beth wears black to the beach to avoid the staining. What is the chemical composition that could be causing that? Beth asks.
Sometimes some of the ingredients and the combination with the sweat or sebum from your skin can discolor clothing. You know, sunscreens are complex mixtures, so sometimes you're not exactly sure which particular ingredient could be the source of the problem. But it's often sometimes the mixture of the chemicals in the sunscreen with your sweat that tend to discolor clothing.
What you mentioned fragrances earlier. What about the added fragrances to these sunscreens and sensitive skin, but also, do you know, sometimes people say, oh, that sunscreen smells like summer. I'm just wondering how much added fragrance is there?
When it comes to the active ingredients in sunscreens, they may have a characteristic odor to them. And it's often that we use fragrance to try and cover up some of what we call the base odor in products. So if you're looking for a sunscreen to be lower irritation or less, you know, hypoallergenic, you want to look for something that is fragrance-free, because fragrance is often the driver of allergic response when it comes to cosmetic products. But some of the sunscreen active ingredients have their own characteristic odor, and, you know, that's just inherent to the material itself. And so sunscreens do have some odor on their own, even if it might be fragrance-free.
So when we are in the aisle with all that sunscreen, all those different products, we only have a few seconds left, though. What is the most important question we should ask ourselves before we go and purchase that bottle?
look for a broad spectrum and an SPF of at least 15 or higher. I would say 30. It should be the minimum. And, you know, there are so many products out there. You want to find the one that you're going to use. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the best sunscreen for you, the one that you will use the most often. And that can vary for every different consumer. So find the one that works for you.
Kelly, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you.
Kelly Dobos is a cosmetic chemist with expertise in skincare product formulations. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.